the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim and Godette. It's Idaho Matters. Whether you're gardening on a budget or just want to make sure you can grow your favorite plants all over again next year, seed saving can come in very handy. And thankfully, there are plenty of plants that produce seeds that you can easily save from one year to the next. So joining us now to talk more about this process is Casey O'Leary, co-founder of the Snake River Seed Cooperative and instructor of horticulture at the College of Western Idaho. Hi, Casey. How are you?
Hi there. Doing well. Glad to be here.
All right. So tell me, what is seed saving? I sort of broached it, but what is it?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's the idea that you can collect seeds from plants that you enjoy, and then you can plant them again.
Nice. So what goes into harvesting seeds? How hard is it?
Well, it depends on what the seed is, I suppose. If you're talking about, say, a flower from your garden, maybe like a cosmos or a zinnia or something like that, sometimes it's as easy as just reaching over and grabbing some seeds off of the plant. They, you know, a lot of times those flowers will dry on the plant and the seeds will just be sitting there. You can see them and you can just grab them and that's it. Sometimes if the seed is inside of a wet fruit, like say a tomato or something like that, then you have to do a little bit of work to get them out of there.
So what do you have to do? I thought of tomatoes automatically because, you know, everybody likes to grow tomatoes in their yard and then they find something they like. How would you do that?
Well, so there's a few things to consider. If you wanted to save seeds off of tomatoes, we always call tomatoes the gateway drug for seed saving. So it's a really good one to talk about. It's an easy one. They're easy to save, but they're also, they'll easily come true to type. So a couple things to think about. Number one, if the plant that you are wanting to save seeds off of, you kind of have to know something about the actual variety that you're growing. Some plants that people commonly grow in their gardens are hybrids. And if you save seeds off of those plants, you can save them and you can replant them, but they might not grow into a plant that's like its parent.
Ooh.
So you have to know kind of what it is. And so if you use an open pollinated variety, like all the Snake River seeds varieties, they're all open pollinated. That's because we like to save seeds. That's our whole model. So if you use an open pollinated variety, those ones will come true to type when you save them. So if you have a plant that's open pollinated, then basically, you just let the fruit ripen on the plant. And then, when the fruit is ripe, the seeds are ripe. You can slice that fruit open and squeeze the seeds out. You can technically just like save them like right from there, those kind of slimy little seeds. You can just dry those out and save them. But that gelatinous sac that's around the seed, you know, if you think about when you cut into a tomato, you know what I'm talking about? There's like that, you know, that little sac. That sack keeps that seed from germinating inside of its warm, wet mom.
Oh.
So it's like a germination inhibitor. So what we do and what is recommended is like a good practice is we ferment the seeds first. So we just squeeze the seeds and pulp into a jar and let them sit uncovered for a few days, and then they start to like get moldy and rotten. It's kind of gross, but what that's doing is breaking down that sac, and it's also killing any seed-borne pathogens that might be in there. And then you just basically rinse them off with water. We call it decanting. You just you put them in a jar and you just fill up that jar with water, and the seeds are heavy. The mature seeds are heavy and they float to the bottom or sink to the bottom of the jar, and the immature seeds and the pulp are lighter and they float to the top. And you just pour those immature seeds and pulp off the top, and you're left with clean seeds at the bottom. And then you can just pour those out onto a plate, something that's not paper, because they'll stick to paper. but, you know, a ceramic plate or anything like that. And you just let them dry out. Just let them dry. Don't put them in the oven or anything. They don't like to be super hot, but just in air temperature. And then they're good to go.
Okay, so what about storing them? Now that we've done the process and we've got them, do we have to store them a certain way to make sure that they don't, I don't know, germinate or die?
Yeah, both are possibilities for sure. So we say heat and humidity are the two enemies of good long kept seed. So you want to keep them somewhere where it's cool, dark, and dry. Okay. A lot of people put seeds in their refrigerator. I don't prefer to do that because the refrigerator is pretty humid. So it's not the ideal space, but like a closet in your house is great. And you do want to make sure that they're dry before you put them into some sort of sealed jar. If you're not sure, it's better to store them like in a paper bag so that, you know that they can breathe. If you're not sure if they're totally dry, if they're wet, they can either sprout or they can mold too.
Okay. I love this. This is fascinating. We're speaking with Casey O'Leary about seed saving. So you mentioned tomatoes are the gateway seed saver. And you mentioned some are easier than others. What sort of things do you lean towards, especially for newbies, to save seeds from?
Yeah, I think that if you're new to seed saving, my first recommendation is to pick something that you love and learn about that particular plant and how it makes seed and how you save the seeds from that plant. So if you're engaged and you love it, then you're much more likely to follow the process through. I will say that when it comes to vegetables and to all plants, really, there are some that are easier than others to save seeds from. And generally, the ones that are easier to save true to type seeds, meaning that they're going to look like their parent when you plant them back out, are the ones that do less cross-pollination out in your garden. So you see all these bees flying around everywhere in your garden. Depending on what plants it is and what other plants are growing nearby, either in your own yard or in a neighbor's yard, sometimes the bees can actually transfer pollen from one plant to another plant that are very different from each other. Like squashes are a good example of that. Oh. There's a lot of different kinds. Like we'll grow zucchini and we'll grow pumpkins in our gardens. Well, it's easy for a bee to move pollen from a zucchini to a pumpkin, and they'll still grow your zucchini fruit or your pumpkin fruit. But if you save the seeds inside of that fruit, then those seeds are a mix of the zucchini mom and the pumpkin dad, say. Oh. Those babies are going to be a mix. So when you plant those out, you're not going to get what you thought you were going to get.
Wow. So
that kind of thing, you kind of want to know how their reproductive system works. You know, are they cross-pollinated by insects? Are they cross-pollinated by wind? But some plants are self-pollinated. So like lettuce, for example, or beans or peas, those plants, they just pollinate themselves. They're hermaphrodites and they just do it by themselves. They don't need any outside help. So those ones generally are less prone to cross-pollination. So we always recommend that people start with selfers when we're talking about vegetable self-pollinating crops, which would be stuff like lettuce, tomatoes, beans, peas. Those are a good place to start. And then as far as flowers, because a lot of people want to save seeds off of flowers, and flowers are some of the easiest plants to save seeds from, because you can really easily see the seeds on the flowers. If you just let them go after they've flowered, they will ripen seeds. And so a lot of times people want to save off of flowers, and that's totally fine. And I think, the most important thing to remember is that it doesn't matter to you if they have cross-pollinated in the field and they don't look like their mom that you saved their seeds from. You know, if it's two different colors of flowers, maybe you want them to cross-pollinate and maybe you want some other cool variation in color. So it's kind of up to you. It's not like you have to save seeds that are true to type. If that's what's so fun about seed saving, is you can sort of see new things popping up in your garden. That's why we have the diversity of crops that we have today, is because people plants were cross-pollinating, have been cross-pollinating for many, many millennia. And we have all this diversity because of that. So you can play in that in your garden as well.
I kind of like the idea of maybe getting a Franken squash. You know, you're never sure what you're going to get. But then, like you said, you have to be sure that, you don't want whatever it is true. So you kind of have to make that decision ahead of time and then decide if you're into Franken squash. Well, then who knows what you'll get?
Go for it. Yeah. And in my opinion, Franken squash has a lot of possibility. The only thing that gets in the way is the summer squashes.
Oh,
if you just do Franken winter squashes, there's a lot more. I think like they're always going to be tasty.
Ooh.
You know, it's the combination of summer squash and winter squash where it's going to get gross. Like who Ooh. Wants a winter squash that has like bland flavor like a zucchini? You know what I mean?
Nah, I gotcha. Okay. This makes sense. So is there any difference between like perennials and annuals when it comes to seed saving?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, as a general rule, it's less important that you save seed from perennials because they're going to come back on their own year after year. But most perennial crops make seeds anyway, even though they also come back year after year. So it is important that you save seeds from annual crops if you want to continue to grow that crop in future years. But both of them generally make seeds. And there's also plants called biennials, where they'll make a plant one year that doesn't make seeds, but then the next year they'll make seeds and die. So things like carrots, a lot of root vegetables are like that. Parsnips, there's a bunch of stuff.
Nice. Okay, so what are the benefits of saving seeds? We kind of touched on a few, but what are the top benefits?
Yeah, I think, you know, how much time do we have to talk about? The most people get into saving seeds because you can have fun, I think, is the first reason. It's just interesting. If you're a gardener, this is the most interesting thing you can do to let these plants go through their entire life cycle, and just get to experience all of the ecology around that process, is really fun for gardeners. It's also really empowering, right? A lot of folks are worried about food security. Our seed supply is getting consolidated into fewer and fewer hands. Big, giant multinational chemical companies own a large percentage of the world's seed at this point. And so a lot of folks get into it just because they would like to be able to have a little bit more self-sufficiency and more resilience. And then folks get into it to save money. Obviously, if you have to keep buying seeds every single year, then that gets expensive. So being able to save your own, I mean, gosh, you know, if you save seed off of one tomato plant, you will never have to buy tomato seeds again. You will have enough seeds to last the rest of your life. I mean, obviously, at some point the viability will go down, but that takes a long time. I mean, you can get good germination from seeds that are well over 10 years old.
Wow.
So, it's a good way to save money. You know, and then a lot of our growers at the co-op, they've gotten into it actually as another part of their farm model. So they make money doing it also.
Nice. Nice. Okay. So, I like this idea. I love the idea of saving seeds. You mentioned, tomatoes as the gateway vegetable. Any other tips for folks who might want to get started trying this out? I think your best tip so far is you have something you like and you want it back next year. Try saving the seeds.
Yeah, I think one thing that people have to remember when they want to save seeds is that you have to think about how a plant is pollinated and what its life cycle looks like. So there's going to be some vegetative growth is going to happen first, leaves of some type, right? And then at some point, the plant's going to flower. And then between the point where it starts to flower and between when there's actually ripe seeds on the plant, that can take a long time. So sometimes people get impatient. So you just want to make sure that you have enough time. Like I used to, when I first started saving seeds, I used to say, oh, well, I'm going to keep cutting my basil plant back. You know, like I want to save basil seeds, but I want to be able to harvest a bunch of basil for months in the summer first. And I'd wait until like August or something to start letting it flower. But I didn't have enough time between when it started to flower and when the seeds would actually become ripe before it frosted and the plant died.
Gotcha.
You know? You want to give yourself some time. And this is all dependent on the exact species. You know, it's some plants work differently. Like I said, tomatoes, when the fruit is ripe, the seed is also ripe. But some things, it takes a while past when you would eat the food for food for the seed to become ripe.
Gotcha. We've been speaking with Casey O'Leary, co-founder of the Snake River Seed Cooperative and instructor of horticulture at the College of Western Idaho about seed saving. And I'm guessing that if people want to know more, they can get in touch with the co-op.
That's a great idea. There are some great resources on the website for folks who want to do this more. There's a free downloadable PDF about how to save your own seeds on there.
Wonderful. Casey, thanks for a little education there.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
Want to learn how to be a master of business without going back to school? Listen to the Planet Money MBA. No suits, no PowerPoints, just the secrets of business school delivered straight to your ears. Every Wednesday till Labor Day on Planet Money from NPR.